This is today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers of the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available online at recordinglibrary.org and by calling the telephone reader at 432-617-5555.
Welcome to another episode of Eyes on Psych with Lewis Busby. I'm Chris Brown, station manager. And Lewis, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing excellent.
This week we have an amazing guest. We have the one and the only Miss Elizabeth Leonard. She's a mental health judge here in Midland County. Is that correct, ma'am?
Yes. I'm the presiding judge of the 238th District Court. And one of the things that I do as the judge of the 238th is run a mental health court docket.
And tell us kind of what a mental health court is.
Mental health court addresses people that have criminal charges and also suffer from a serious mental illness. And by that, I mean bipolar, schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, or major depressive disorder. That's what we target. And we also target the best practices is to target the high risk, high need. And so we have assessments done through our probation department that will assess their risk and their needs. And so we try and really focus on the seriously mentally ill.
Well, so what are some of the exceptions that you make for people who are determined to have these disorders?
Well, what we do is we invite them to come watch a mental health court session. And you have to understand, mental health court is voluntary. Okay. They have to want to get better. Just placing them in mental health court and hoping that all works out, we have not had success with. So it's a voluntary program. They come, they watch a mental health court session, which is every other Thursday at 2 o'clock in the 238th. And they let us know if it's something that they're interested in participating in.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. What is it that made you interested in being a part of this?
Mental illness is so pervasive. It touches so many families and so many lives. I was a prosecutor for almost 11 years, and I saw it back in the 90s and the 2000s when I was prosecuting. There was mental illness, but there were no programs for them. With families, if it doesn't destroy the family, it really stresses out the family. It really puts a lot of tension on relationships. So this was a way to kind of take some burden off those families and start addressing it through the probation terms or bond terms so we can start working with people and getting them the help that they need.
And Lewis, you're a big fan of this process. Why is that?
I absolutely love it. The disorders that she specifically specified, especially bipolar, is becoming more and more common. And when they're not on their medication, and bipolar people generally do not want to be on their medication, it causes a lot of conflicts in society, and then they end up in the prison system a lot more likely than they would the average person. Mm-hmm. And so this is a way to bypass that, to get them the actual help they need. And a lot of them are indigent. And this will help with that as well.
And I want to address that, too, because one of the things that we really talk about when they come to mental health court, the first thing I ask them, how are your medications going? Are you having any side effects? And we will have the mental health professionals there. We have a assertive community treatment member who is part of our stakeholder team, and she is there. And then we also have two other people from MHMR who are at the mental health court meetings. That's the first thing I want to know is, are they having any side effects? Do we need to staff that with the doctor? Mm-hmm. When's your next doctor's appointment? And that's the first thing I always ask, is I want to make sure, A, they're on their medication, and then B, they're not having side effects. And if they are, let's try and help them through that.
I agree. A lot of them are indigent. They don't have income. A lot of them can't make it to their appointments and stuff like that. But this way is a way to kind of bypass some of that issue.
And that's another thing that you point out, is not being able to make it to appointments or not being able to make it to go pick up their medicines. That's what the county commissioners have so graciously funded for us, is this ACT team member. So she is designated to work with the Midland Mental Health Court. And so she focuses on these people that she'll either take them their medicines up to five times a week to make sure they are taking them. And if they have transportation issues and need a ride to their doctor's appointment or need a ride over to Supermercado where they get their medicines, that's taken care of. Those are the kind of issues that we have solved so people can stay in services.
Lewis, what are some of the drawbacks of this? One of the things that you mentioned was the fact that this has to be voluntary.
Yes.
And what I've been wondering this whole time is when Lewis mentioned that bipolar people don't even want to take their medicines, what kind of a conflict does that cause with people who probably aren't likely to volunteer to do this? How do you reach out to those folks?
No, that's part of them saying, yes, I want to get better. And yes, I am willing to go to the doctor and take my medicine. And if they come in and they're really sleepy or they come in and they're having other side effects, we can staff it. The ACT team member will staff it with the doctor. And if they need to get them in sooner, they can do that. If, you know, sometimes there's a waiting period and there's some side effects that are expected. And, you know, they just kind of have to get through those weeks to be relieved of those side effects. But that's part of the treatment plan, and they understand that. They all get a participant's manual before they enter, and they sign a contract saying, yes, I will agree to the terms of this participant's plan. And so they know what they're getting into prior to accepting this. And they all have to be competent to take a plea of guilty. They all have to be competent before they're going through the court system. So we don't, this is not for the people who are not competent.
As far as bipolar disorder goes, just I have people in my family who are bipolar, and it's a real challenge. I would imagine that they are a real challenge in particular just because it's not that they're incompetent. It's that from one phase to the next, they're at their manic stage or depressive stage. They're almost two completely different people, and where one side of them would agree to take treatment when they go, just the nature of their disorder when they get to the other side of the bipolar disorder, how do they make that commitment themselves when the nature of their disorder says that they really would have a difficult time doing so?
Well, okay, so if they're facing, you know, charges and all that, I would assume, I mean, they're going to be completely alert and aware of what they're doing, whether they're manic or depressive. So there's not really two separate people. It's just that the mania in and of itself is a chemical. It's a chemical issue. So when they're in a manic state, for instance, everything that we would normally, they're hyper. It's hyperactivity, hypersexuality, hyper drug use, hyperspending, hyper all kinds of things. But the problem is the mania. They just don't think about the consequences.
That's exactly what I was going towards. Is if they're in a manic state, when they agree to this program, they're depressed.
They probably aren't in a manic state when they're going in, I would assume.
No, they're not, because to get into the program, it's not like, okay, one day you just decide you're in it and then you're in it. You have to apply to be in the program. You have to get voted upon. You have to be stabilized on medication.
That more answers what I was asking.
Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah, we don't send people to prison when they're in a manic state. We don't put them on probation when they're in a manic state. Typically, the defense attorneys will intervene and ask for a psychiatric evaluation. You know, anyone can intervene, the court or a prosecutor, but it can become obvious when people are in a manic state. Okay. I've had a couple of them in court. Mm.
Your job's obviously pretty challenging. Mental health court is definitely different from regular court. And you meet different defendants every other week. So what have you learned in getting to know these defendants about some of the challenges that they face?
Going through probation, sometimes that's hard for people who do not suffer from a serious mental illness. It's just exponentially harder for those who do suffer from a serious mental illness, especially if they are not stabilized on their medication. I think you may agree with me with this statement, is just because you're stabilized today doesn't mean you won't have a trigger and you will get a little off track.
Absolutely. Or the medication itself could cease to be effective.
Do y'all allow for instances like that for these people in the program?
That's why mental health court works, because we do allow it. And when they get off track, it's a group, and we all kind of bring them back on track. And it's like, okay, you've gone through some depression, you had a father that has died, or you have, you know, a breakup with a spouse or something like that. We understand that. and we understand that that might hit you harder than some other people. We understand that there's facts and circumstances that can come into your life, and our whole goal is to get you back on track so that you can be well and so you can successfully complete your probation.
See, that's what I'm having trouble wrapping my mind around. When you hear the term mental court or mental health court, you think, oh, obviously that's a great idea, but really, when you get into the inner workings of everything, it sounds extremely difficult to execute. And I would not want to have your job, because on one hand, I can see you being torn with trying to be tough on certain subjects, but also wanting to show exception on other situations. How do you make that decision?
Well, the times when you make exceptions, for example, you didn't do your community service this week. That's not a safety issue. If it becomes a safety issue or you commit another offense, then probation has to file a motion to revoke. This doesn't have to do with public safety, because if there's safety issues, then it goes through a revocation like any other case, and another judge is assigned to it to hear the revocation. These are, okay, you couldn't pick up your medication, or you missed your doctor's appointment, or you are behind in your payments and we need to work out another payment plan and help you in budgeting. Okay, let's help you get a resume together so you can go out and start interviewing for work if you're not disabled. Those are the kind of issues that I deal with.
You try to help them get back on their feet and kind of put them in a better mental state through bettering their lifestyle.
Absolutely. I want them independent as well as they can be. I want them to do their personal best.
Now, Lewis, speaking of which, what are some of the ways that you would suggest to help these folks in this process?
Sounds like they have a pretty good plan in place. I mean, pretty much everything that she said, I agree with. I think the main thing is just realizing that if they're in a mental health crisis, that we need to be more proactive. And I think that's why I'm so impressed with Midland in general, like we've talked when we talked with Sheriff Painter. Mm-hmm. The mental health deputies, the mental health court, the way that we're doing things here is great. The only thing I'm not impressed with, like I've said before, is our school system as far as the mental health, because we've lost it for the most part. But everything else, our city is definitely more proactive towards taking care of mental health issues. One thing that I would think would be most complicated is if someone was schizophrenic also in the court system, because that is when they're really not in their right minds. That's a little different than the bipolar, per se.
Yeah, how do you work with stuff like that?
The schizophrenics, if they're on medication, I have great success with schizophrenics. Right. And I've had two. One was schizophrenic, one was bipolar. I don't know why. I cannot tell you why. But they were in a psychotic state, and for some reason, they found themselves at the courthouse at 2 o'clock on the right Thursday, and they came to mental health court because they knew we were here to help them. And both of them voluntarily went to the hospital. We had the mental health court deputies responded immediately, and both of them said, yes, I will go and get help. And they went to the hospital, and both are great successes now.
How long has the mental health court been applied in Midland?
Since December 13.
December of 2013.
Yes.
Now, obviously, this is it's a process.
It is.
What were some of the challenges that y'all felt early on that y'all been able to overcome?
The mental health court, first of all, it was brand new to Midland. Nobody really knew how to do it. There's some great training that we received, and that gave us the framework for all of this. But then we realized that one of the real key components to mental health isn't just the mental health court once they're in the court system, but a lot of people come into the jail that are off of their medicine or in some kind of psychiatric state. And so that's when we expanded to the psychiatric services in the jail. And I don't know if Sheriff Painter talked about this or not, but we got a qualified mental health professional working full-time in the jail. Mm-hmm. And then Dr. Strobel, who is the medical director of MHMR, she comes every Friday morning. So our mental health professional can assess them and work up the cases for Dr. Strobel so she can diagnose them and prescribe medication for them. So now people are getting to the doctor and getting on their meds, instead of a month or so, it's down to about a week.
That's right. Exactly what I was about to ask, is how long the process takes.
Right. We've cut weeks off of that.
And in the community, it's really, we have very few psychiatrists in this region. So in the community, it's very complicated for, if I want a patient now, they will get my patients in pretty quickly, like Dr. Luli, Dr. Lineback, all of them. But for the most part, for the average person just going out there to seek help for themselves, it's going to be a month and a half, 2 months wait.
I can actually personally tell you about that. When I was younger, I sought out mental health help when I was in my early 20s, and it was not a fun process. It's a very long process, and if you get with one doctor and you decide that you don't really care for them that much, good luck. You know, you're going to have – it's just – it's not a fun process. Yes, ma'am.
And something I want to kind of shed a little light here on MHMR, because I'm excited about this program, is you can go to MHMR. You can walk in and ask for a screening between 8 and 4. And I believe their address is 401 East Illinois or 400 East Illinois. It's a four-story red brick building with black glass on it in the 400 block of East Illinois. If you have a serious mental illness and qualify for mental health services because they're state-funded, they have certain criteria, you can get into MHMR. But if you do not have one of those serious mental illnesses, they have started what's called a Bridges program, and that's for the people who don't have one of the serious mental illnesses. Maybe it's anxiety, maybe it's depression, but not major depressive disorder.
I was about to ask if y'all do anything for people with less serious conditions. Personally, when I was seeking out help, it was because me and my son's mother were breaking up. It was a situational thing, you know, and me and her were, you know, we had my son together. She was the only person I'd ever been in a relationship for that long of a time. And it was just in that point in my life, I really felt like I needed some help. So what do you do for people in situational?
We know I have my issues with MHMR sometimes because of it's a bureaucracy, so it's complicated, and there's going to be people falling through the cracks and whatnot. But Bridges is something that I'm really impressed with that they have done, because they take on the stuff that usually falls through the cracks. So that was good when it started.
So you like the Bridges program?
I do. I think it helps with all of that kind of stuff. That's pretty much it. I mean, there's a lot of other nonprofits, but they don't actually take on people off the street for the most part that are indigent. That's the problem. I get a lot of them referring to me, and then I have people walking in when I'm with the patient. So,
and let's just throw out there, I think you would agree that if somebody is in a psychotic state, I'm sorry.
Do
you okay?
Yeah, then call 911.
Absolutely.
We have mental health deputies that can respond.
I'll be right there.
And when you call 911, tell them that you want a mental health deputy to respond, and they will take them to the appropriate place.
I'm glad you said that. It lets people know how, I mean, if they're really in a state of crisis, how they can get to be a part, or maybe apply to be a part of this program.
The neat thing, too, they actually, I think they've trained a few of the actual police officers, too, to be a part of that team.
They do.
Which makes it a lot quicker.
Mental health officers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Midland's a lot more reactive. That's why I'm saying if I have someone that walks in off the street and they're having psychosis, and it's happened a few times, I call them, they'll be there in 30 minutes or so, which is enough time for, I mean, I'm calming them down. I can do that. That's what I do. But that's a lot quicker than if I was at my Odessa office, for instance, where, you know, they might come in a few hours. So we're a lot more proactive here.
You were featured in an article in the Victoria Advocate, Texas' second oldest newspaper. And according to them, mental health courts are less popular and receive less funding than drug courts. What do you think of that occurrence, and do you think that mental health courts should be better funded?
Drug courts are kind of the granddaddy of all the specialty courts. They were the original specialty court. They go back a lot further than the mental health courts. Mental health courts and veterans courts, DWI courts, family drug courts. You know, there's a lot of courts that have kind of grown out of the drug court model.
You know, I didn't know that there were so many specialty courts, maybe because I haven't been in the court system a whole
lot,
but it's a good thing. But just you saying that, I had no idea that there were so many.
There are. And we have a veterans court in Midland that Judge Darr runs, and we're looking at starting a drug court also. So we'll have three specialty courts here soon.
It seems like Midland's trying to be proactive. I don't think a lot of people realize how proactive the Midland judicial system is trying to be.
Well, let me take it just one step further. In my role as a mental health court judge, I also sit on the Midland Behavioral Health Leadership Team. It's a new group that started last year. And what this group is looking at doing is addressing mental health as a community. And there's eight different areas that we're looking at. Criminal justice is just one of those. We're looking at trying to centralize mental health questions, mental health, not necessarily treatment. We don't all want to work for one person, but just information and where do you go in Midland if your son or daughter is experiencing some kind of mental health issue, or you think they might be, or you have a question about it. Who do you turn to? Who do you call? That's one of the things we're looking at doing.
Why do you feel like treatment should be first priority? A lot of Texas judges are known for being very hard on crime, not really treatment oriented. Why do you differ?
Let me first address that. This court is for people who are probation eligible. It's not for the people who aren't going to get on probation.
Okay.
It's people that are not deemed to be too risky for the community.
So okay? You see a potential of a productive member of society.
Absolutely. And they just need a little more help.
Basically, I was just wondering why you feel that treatment is a priority over punishment.
First of all, these are people who are probation eligible and that have been given a probation offer. It's for or people who are out on pond that don't have a violent felony offense that they're charged with. It's not just for everybody. If somebody's committed a triple capital murder, they're not going to be referred to mental health court, right, even though they might have been in a psychotic state while they did it.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, that's always kind of in the back of your mind. But the best practices tell us until you get their medication, their money, and their housing stabilized, you can't start to work on substance abuse or any of the other factors that go into improving their lives. So med money housing is kind of what they really talk about at these conferences that I've been to. What we do is before they can enter mental health court, they've got to have some kind of stabilized housing, whether it be with family members or they work or something. They have to have stabilized housing that they can afford. And then we work with the money part and the medication part. They've got to get stabilized on their medicine. Are they disabled to the point where they qualify for federal benefits? There's a person that helps them fill out those forms. Or are they to the point where maybe they just need help with job searches, with getting resumes? We have people who have had jobs here and there for short periods of time, who are now keeping jobs for months, if not years. You know, it's not going to be perfect, but it's improvement. Mm-hmm. You want to see upward progress.
You're just trying to make them the best person they could potentially be and see where that goes.
Exactly.
Give them an opportunity to be that, though. That's the important part.
Until they get that treatment part, the medication is what I'm calling treatment.
Right.
Or controlled, you can't start to even address any of the other.
Basically, what it sounds like to me is you take somebody who's had a pretty troubled time. This has led to them committing some sort of a minor offense. You see potential in that person, and you think that given the right circumstances, they could be a productive member of society.
I think you'll probably agree with me that, you know, it's not necessarily a minor offense. I deal with felonies in the 238.
As I said that, I knew that was a bad choice of words.
Right. That's okay. I mean, a lot of times they might have an assault on a family member. It might be a felony type of offense.
Oh, I didn't realize that it would go that you'd go that far up. I mean, I work with assaults and things like that.
Assault on a police officer is
really
a felony case.
And that happens a lot during psychoses, too.
Right. You've got to go to where they are. That's the whole point of helping people is that you have to meet them where they are and see if you can bring them up. You can't just say, here are our expectations. Hope you can meet them.
Where do y'all cut off the line? Where's the line as far as offenses go?
We look at each one of them individually.
So it's not necessarily even a certain offense that you won't consider. It's completely situational. Each case is individually looked at.
Yes. They have to be probation eligible. If the district attorney's office feels like somebody has committed a murder and that's probation eligible.
I don't think 30 minutes is a long enough time to wrap our minds around what you do, because there's just so many exceptions to the rule and there's just so many different situations that I could imagine that you've seen over the years.
But isn't that what serious mental illness is? They're
absolutely. Absolutely.
It's always changing.
I don't even know why I thought that we could box this up in 30 minutes.
Are we finished?
We're toward the end of the show, which brings us to letters to Lewis. Sarah, would you like to read the letter?
All right, let's see. Dear Lewis, I recently applied for a job that I was very excited about. one that would be a long-term career. I was almost certain that I would get it. I met all of the requirements, plus more. I found out that I did not get the job. I'm devastated and let down. How do I tell my friends and family that I didn't get it? I'm taking it personally, and it has taken a toll on my self-esteem. Thanks, David.
All right, David. Don't take it personally. Most jobs have multiple applicants. It does not mean that you are not worthy or anything of that nature. I would just keep moving forward. Tell your family, just tell them that clearly, I did not get this job. And then keep looking. Always keep your head up. There's always possibilities. There will always be other jobs. So I wouldn't take that as personal as you're taking it. I would reflect that it's not something against you. It's just there was probably multiple candidates, and that's just how it works in the system.
You know, I can actually identify with that personally myself.
Right.
Radio is a very hard industry to be in. It's extremely competitive. And before I was the station manager here, I'd applied for many management jobs in radio. I got turned down for some. Some just completely wouldn't even look at me because I had only been in radio for about 3 years at the time. And normally you have to have a lot more experience to be in management. But I felt like I was ready to take on a station of my own. So I got turned down, and it was very discouraging. But it's funny how I got discouraged getting turned down by so many jobs. But then when this one finally gave me the call, when Trish finally called me and said that I had the job here, it fit so perfectly. And that's one thing that you have to keep in mind is you might think that you're ready for one job, but I guarantee you the one that you end up with is probably going to be the right one. The world just has a way of working itself out like that.
It really does. I can think back of my own history. Certain things would not have happened in my own life. There's so many things. I could have been a police officer. I would be something different, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm very happy with where I am. It's a perfect job for me. It's a perfect degree, perfect license. I'm happy.
And I never intended to be in radio. It happened by accident, you know? And as soon as it happened, I was like, oh, yeah, I should have been doing this all along. It's funny how it all works out. And I'd like to thank you, Judge Leonard, for being on the show. You did an amazing job.
Thank you. It was great speaking with you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And thank you, Lewis.
Thank you. And David, if you have any more questions, just inbox us and I'll respond to them.
Thank you guys for listening to Eyes on Psych, and we'll see you next week.
That's all for today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers of the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available online at recordinglibrary.org and by calling the telephone reader at 432-617-5555.